Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone, and welcome once again to PWT Talks NXT. This is the show for October 28th, 2020, Halloween Havoc. Yes, this was the 13th iteration of Halloween Havoc, we were told on screen. So they had that going for them. You can't half-ass a show like Halloween Havoc, and they did not. They went full bore with the Halloween theme, and I thought it paid off in some pretty cool ways. I am Kelly Wells. I am your host. We are going to talk the main event first, and then we're going to go to the phone lines. You want to call us? You sure can. That's 515-605-9345, or email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That is what you can do. So the main event of this show that could have had a lot of different main events was Io Shirai defending against Candice LeRae in a tables, ladders, and scares match. I'm your host. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk. And let me throw to Tom Staub to see what he thought of the main event.
I am at Tom Staub on Twitter. And despite the rumors, no, I was not the person dressed as She-Ra in the front row tonight. This was the rightful main event. I got my prediction, even though it wasn't Shotzi's choice getting us there. It was tables, ladders, and scares with Io going over. I apologize in advance that this is what I'm going to say about a lot of the matches tonight, but this one no more than any other, or I should say this one more than any other, the opposite of what I said, this one more than any other suffered from the fact that NXT has decided to only have one pace lately. Everything is so high speed all the time that everything they do matters less. And Io and Candice beat the hell out of one another. Candice took a really, really nasty looking bump for her final bump of the match on that ladder. And it just felt like it mattered way less because this was the only pace that we got in the action and the storytelling all night long. So it was especially being the last match, it suffered the fact that I was exhausted by the time that we got there. And you also have the relative intrigue of these Father Death masked characters, the Scream mask characters. I'm saying that plural because the obvious thing is to suspect that it's Indy Hartwell, who we've already seen aligned with Candice. But because they did not unmask tonight, I wonder if they're actually going to have a reason why they used the Scream masks in particular, because if you've seen that movie, sorry for the spoiler, but it ends up that there are two different people as opposed to just one. So it's a good spot to bring Austin Theory back in, or perhaps, one of these other wrestlers that they recently, NXT just went through another round of renaming people that aren't on TV yet. Maybe like a Daniel Vito, who off the top of my head, Doc Bruce told me earlier, I think it's Xylo Quinn. If I have that right, is Daniel Vito's new name, but most likely both Indy. Also extremely likely and has really good reasoning behind it, Indy and Austin. But for all the reasons that I'm upset with NXT right now for just going high octane every single second and all the reasons I think that it's suffering, one of them is that these wrestlers are putting their bodies on the line like crazy, and it means so much less. And I thought we saw that in the spotlight in the main event tonight.
I actually thought it was Theory both times, but I'm trying to make sense of it maybe being Theory the second time. I don't know how much weight he's got on him or how much weight Io can hoist up and like not look like it's difficult for her at all. But his muscle has got to be real heavy because there sure is a lot of it. So I don't know. I don't know if that was him the second time.
Both of them are power lifters.
Okay, that's true. So I guess that could be. That ending spot for Candice was an incredible visual because as far as where she landed, it couldn't have gone any better. She bisected the table completely and draped over it as it snapped and didn't snap all the way, it couldn't have looked more effective. But it was so, oh, it looked so painful that I sucked in and had to stop typing. And Io walked over to her, and I thought Io checking on her was going to be part of the finish because she was so thrown by exactly what had happened. And Candace just sold it like death. And Io, I think, had a moment where she genuinely was like, I had better check on her. I've got to check on her. And then, of course, she goes up and retrieves the belt at 16:31. I, too, am noticing the pacing issues, and I'm hoping that those pacing issues clear up a little bit next week, although they've been doing a little of this. And we were just talking last week and perhaps the week before about how it feels sort of like the Crash TV elements of the Attitude Era, where they're doing everything so fast that you don't have really have time to think about what you just saw. And it kind of makes you at the end sort of forget some of what you've seen. We saw a lot of cool stuff, or potentially cool stuff, and certainly important to storyline things throughout the night. But by the end, when it's been at this pace, it's hard to remember just about any of it. I too thought that they were setting it up for the choice, for Shotzi's choice. Shotzi, by the way, I think best case scenario tonight. I thought that this leaned into all the parts of her non-wrestling persona that really do work. Her just sort of weird frenetic energy, and she lives kind of on a heightened plane of reality, and that worked because so did this show. She wore, I think, three different costumes, kind of a zombie thing at the beginning. There's probably something specific that it was. Then there was an Elvira type that she did, and then she was a she-devil at the end. Really thought it was a nice touch that she figured into the finish because she didn't want to see another cheap finish with Ghostface helping out in the first match, which we, of course, will get to. But I liked a lot of what we saw today, but I, too, have issues with this pace that seems like it can't be kept up, but I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
And I'll at least mention briefly that I agree there was a rock and roll feel tonight that worked. NXT goes for that a lot, and it's aggravating a lot. I know that's all subjective, but tonight had the rock and roll feel I was hoping it would have, the Rob Zombie-ish type feel. And Shotzi played into that perfectly. She did exactly what I was hoping she would do. It was too much, but it was the right amount of too much for what they were going for. I forgot to mention that I did also part of my prediction that I did like her getting involved in the match, because if Candace miraculously is in one piece after that fall, she now has another feud to spiral off onto.
Yeah, and you don't want Candace, as hot as she's been, to be idle. And Io, of course, has no dearth of suitors. We got Ember on the horizon, but I think we get Toni Storm even before her, even though we've had no mention of Toni Storm, really, for a week or two here. But she's going to be just fine in that title picture. And a really healthy women's division would be, I don't know, I would like to see one long title reign, since NXT has been marred by a lot of short ones, and that is not the NXT way, but in the USA era, it has been their way. Priest was their longest running champion. I think he had one day on Escobar. It's either that or it's the other way around. Escobar definitely now is the longest reigning champion, and hasn't had it for all that long. Anyway, yes, I thought this would be Shotzi's choice, but whatever. Good job, Shotzi. That's all I'll say about Shotzi. Good job tonight. Io versus Candace, main event, 16:31. Nate Lindberg.
So we're talking about the pacing and all of that stuff. And, you know, you said you're not sure if this is a pace they're going to be able to keep up. And I wonder that myself, especially because of, you know, it almost seems like every week there's, you know, a new COVID outbreak, you know, that's running through the performance center that, you know, potentially could change things. And so you never know. You never know who's all of a sudden going to be sidelined for a couple of weeks, due to needing to quarantine and all of that. So it's like this frenetic pace, you know, we've talked about a few times where it almost seems like it might be a counter program in AEW. I don't know, but the pacing that they do have, it's just like, I don't know if they can keep it up. And it's like, you mentioned, like, it's, you almost forget what happened throughout the course of the show. Just there's so much that they're throwing at you. And it's, you know, I mean, it's our job here to go back and analyze it, you know, talk about it and all of that. And I'm like, I have to go, like, the past few weeks, it's like I'm going through my notes more and more, because there's just so much that's going on that it kind of just escapes my brain. So, yeah, in this match, I do feel like kind of suffered from that as well. So I feel like in a lot of respects, a lot of the night did. But overall, I enjoyed this match. I liked the way that they crafted and they kind of wove the weapons into the match. There was still like an abundant use of weapons, but it didn't seem like too over the top. It seemed like a nice ratio, if you will, of weapons. This did also, you know, obviously I kind of expected to see Io go over here tonight. I feel like she's had a pretty strong title run, and I kind of expected it to continue. I also really didn't expect to see it on a non-takeover. I know they're building, you know, they obviously built this to be kind of a special show, but I don't know. Like, we always talk about the women's title being kind of the most prestigious and the best protected, and I feel like those title changes should happen at TakeOver, personally, anyway. But no, overall, I mean, I thought this was a great match. The whole ghost face thing between this match as well as the opener, obviously Indy was the first one that came to mind. Theory crossed my mind, but it wasn't anything I was really thinking about until you guys said it. So I definitely wouldn't be a bad way to reintroduce him, you know, after he quit. But Indy seems like at least the most obvious choice, but I know NXT isn't always, they don't always go for the most obvious choice, which is a good thing. It's a good thing.
Wow. I was thinking that Theory is by far the most obvious choice. I think this has to be Theory, at least one of them. I even avoided typing it in because I was trying to avoid giving a spoiler. I just said, I think the hints are in place. I think it's got to be Theory.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense now that you guys say, yeah, but I guess it was just, I had my mind so set on Indy Hartwell because she's the one that, you know, has been helping them and all of that. It certainly could make sense and get put into place. And I think, they could roll with it. It'd be good. I enjoyed it. But I definitely agree that the pacing of these matches definitely need to slow down. It's especially too, where it's like, you know, you don't have a paying crowd right now. You don't have a real live crowd. Like, you know, Tom said, don't, maybe in a way, you know, yeah, you want to put on this spectacle and things to try and wow the people at home. But, you know, at the same time, it's different. I don't know. I wish they weren't taking as many risks as they are, in a crowdless arena. Well, not necessarily crowdless, but you know what I mean? No, that's all I'm going to say about that.
100 fans from the outside there tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
After a COVID outbreak.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Were these actual paying fans, or were they stood
not
the
paying?
Same type of,
it's
okay.
Like it, in, yeah. Invite only. I believe.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Should I retweet my report again?
Yeah. Right. Okay. So emails, we get them. This is from Jack Argyle. Hey, guys, hope you're all well and good. Just wanted to say last week on NXT, for the first time in ages, I felt like the audience was treated like adults, which isn't usual for the main roster. Them telling us Undisputed Era had been sent to a hospital, not a local medical facility. Just Mackenzie Mitchell piping in while a match was on, letting us know what was happening backstage. And after finishing our interviews, not staring into space, just little things like saying back to you guys at the desk, just felt like a proper sports interviewer. At this point, Argyle went on to say, what should NXT's, who should have the big moments in NXT in Survivor Series? And then we learned that they will not have any moments in Survivor Series. He followed up with another email saying, do you think them not having NXT part of the show is a benefit for them? I think it helps not muddling up all the storylines on weekly TV, but just can't help but think a Damian Priest, Shotzi Blackheart could have had a big boost for them too. Also love knowing you guys hate Shotzi shouting welcome to the ball pen or whatever that stupid saying is. It's ball pit, but it is stupid. First time I laughed and now I cringe almost as much as listening to Booker T on a kickoff show. But I love Shotzi, do think she can be the women's champion at some point. Hardly watch any AEW, but would say she's almost a female Darby Allin. He's one of the only people in AEW I enjoy. Cheers, guys. Stay safe and vote. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. I would have said that Shotzi was at her peak about 6 weeks ago. I know that Tom and I thought especially thought she kind of found her lane, although Nate had higher hopes for her and liked the act. But I think that I could buy into Shotzi Blackheart, future NXT champion, at this point. I think there might... Where's the opening? That's the question. It's a really, really good division, and I think she's going to play upper mid-card gatekeeper, if that makes sense. There's actually enough women to talk about them as having a role like that. I think that's where she's going to be for now. If there are more thoughts on that, we can roll them into whatever other questions we're going to get. But we are going to go to the phone lines, and we are going to talk to our friend Darrell and see what Darrell wants to ask us about Halloween Havoc.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty all right. I thought I had a follow-up there, but I don't. Nothing's wrong, so I don't have to preface that with anything.
Okay. On this chills and thrill pre-Halloween night show. Which was quite interesting. Well, tonight's show, I like the feel of the show, having, like, with Damian Priest, the band, live rock band playing his entrance and stuff like that. Also having Poppy out there for Io Shirai. Made it feel good. I put those two matches together because those going to be in my question. I kind of felt a little sour with the ending. I know you guys are speaking on it with the screen match, people coming out on both of those matches. I felt sour on it at first when they helped Johnny because I was trying to take where could they go with this and things like that. I was happy that when it happened in the Io Shirai match, that was going to sour me on the whole show and have me have two thumbs down. But since she overcame it, that made me look at the first match and it happening a little bit better. How did you guys feel on both of those, with them having both of those come out, and how did you think, and where do you think is going with Johnny and Damian Priest?
I feel as you did. It's understandable that a heel would make a run in and help win in a street fight in the Devil's Playground match, which, you know, it's funny. They wouldn't have even had to gimmick the wheel. It obviously was because of the way that it kind of finished suddenly both times, but they wouldn't have had to gimmick it because almost any of them could just be framed as a false count anywhere street fight. And that's what this was, a false count anywhere street fight. The opener, Priest versus Gargano, was the longest match of the night at 20 minutes and 54 seconds. Unless you count Loomis and Grimes, which was technically an hour, which I do not. But Priest versus Gargano went 20:54. And I'm okay with him. I'm actually more than okay with Priest losing a championship this way. If you're going to go babyface, just go all the way and have him lose in a not clean fashion. I don't think that heels should almost ever win championships cleanly. I don't think that makes anyone really look good in the end. And you don't have to protect the heel. They'll be just fine if they ever have to turn face. Fans don't care. They forget. But it would have made EO and all baby faces in the arena look real, real stupid if they hadn't done something about Ghostface when he came out the second time. And in retrospect, I'm like, oh, of course it's Shotzi. She's right there anyway. So you might as well move her into this storyline. I thought it all came together very well, even though it was told at a in a very frenetic way. I think it sets up some things that are interesting. I loved the live guitarist for Damian Priest. He was extremely skilled. You know what he deserved? He deserved to have Vic announce who the hell he was, because I don't know, and I wish I did. He's maybe somebody that I'm supposed to know, but I don't. I don't know who that guitarist was. But anyway, guys, I'll throw to you about the opener, Priest versus Gargano, and just kind of the story of the night, because I think we all agreed that this could be where the Garganos won everything, but that's not the way they did. Nate, on the opener.
So you said this was the longest match of the night, and it certainly started to feel like it after a little while for me. Now that's not to say I didn't necessarily like the match itself, but it kind of, especially in the middle for me, kind of just started to drag. I guess part of it was because, you know, they're like, oh, this is going to be a Devil's Playground match. And I'm like, ooh, what's a Devil's Playground match? And then I hear them on commentary just, you know, essentially say it's, an Extreme Rules match, just false count or false count anywhere, you know, whatever. And it's like, okay, well, that's cool. And I mean, I know, obviously, you know, when you're going to have some sort of a match where you can't, whether you're going to gimmick the wheel or not, or, you know, like they did with like Cyber Tuesday or whatever it was called. Cyber Tuesday. They did another one on Sunday. I don't remember, but whatever. You know, obviously that's an easy way to gimmick it. You just kind of have a whole bunch of names for the same, you know, few types of matches and go from there. But it was, I did enjoy like the, you know, they fought through the Capitol Wrestling Center and, you know, going through all the different, decorations and things that they had in the set. It was fun. I liked the tombstone. That was probably the only thing that I really liked about the ending, just for the pure absurdity of it. And, you know, obviously watching it just kind of shatter into a million pieces and stuff. I thought was a cool touch, especially on like a Halloween Havoc, a tombstone being a unique weapon. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody use a tombstone before, other than a tombstone pile driver. So that was cool. I agree with you. If you're going to have, the babyface lose, you have some sort of a dirty finish, not clean, you know, unclean finish, whatever you want to call it. Obviously it's going to get more heat on the heel, and kind of you put a little bit more sympathy on the face. I'm not sure where Priest is necessarily going to go from here. I don't necessarily think if this is going to be a call-up situation for him, although it could be. He's polished enough where I feel like, you know, he could go to the main roster. Then again, I don't want him to, selfishly. But I do think we'll probably see him stick around for a little bit. I kind of want to see him try to claw his way back to the NXT North American Championship. I don't know if I'm necessarily, I mean, if you want it again, cool, but I kind of want to see him try to get that win back. Even if it's a non-title win, but get the win back, for losing it in the way that he did. Especially once we find out who was under that mask, the multiple people that could have been under those masks. I think that's going to come into play as to where, some of these stories go. But, I think that's all I got to say about Priest. Priest and Gargano. So we'll go to Tom.
So it was funny with the when Theory handed him Theory. I say I think it was Theory, but when he handed him the tombstone, and then it shatters, and the way it shatters and breaks just so into so many pieces, it just looks like it was like mud or Adobe or something like that. I'm just thinking, God, it's a good thing that it just didn't just break in Theory's hands as he was trying to make the transfer from one to the other.
I'm thinking the same thing,
which would have been hilarious. Don't get me wrong, but I guess it's good that it didn't. Tom, on the opener.
1995 arcade cabinet, WrestleMania, the arcade game. You can hit people over the head with tombstones as the Undertaker.
Ooh.
So I get to shout out Joel Pearl from the Tim and Joel podcast earlier than I usually do, because he's the one who told me that that guitarist is Chaz Williams from the New York-based metal band The Silencer. I'm probably not going to listen to his music ever, but yes, he was very good tonight. Let's see. There's no now after going through those two little tidbits, I'm finding my notes again. There's no better evidence for the fact that NXT's strategy of just going high octane every single second and never bringing the energy down. The evidence for that is no better seen than in Johnny Gargano's recent matches, because Johnny Gargano's hallmark is bringing the pace of the action down so he can then bring it back up toward the end of the match. So his climax means more no matter what you saw before it. And he has not done that in his recent matches. So that's, you know, it seems like this new mentality is a blanket statement over all of NXT. And that's, this is why I think that. Yeah, I was disappointed in the stipulation. You guys covered that just fine. And I did also notice that so many of the stipulations were analogous. I mean, if they hadn't hung the title above the ring in the TLS match, then it would have been the exact same stipulation, except Falls had to count in the ring. And I'm tempted to go harder on the idea that last week the tag titles changed and it didn't matter because it wasn't about the titles. It was about Pat McAfee. And, but in that situation, it's just the tag titles. They've been in purgatory for a while. So who cares? And this time I wanted to say like, oh, well, you know, we got another title change that doesn't really mean anything because who cares? We aren't given a chance to care about it. Damian Priest has been looking like they want to call him up for a while. Maybe they will. I don't know. But all of that said, for the sake of saying it, because I was thinking it, I'm not going to go too hard on it because it really seems like they have something planned for the Gargano way, with bringing in new people and with giving Johnny the title. It seems like they've got an idea for where they want to go with it in a multi-week, multi-month storyline. So if giving Johnny the title here is part of it, fine. Priest's run felt like it was short, but it was strong. I think he's looked better than ever during this run. So I don't think he's really hurt by it. I will let it play out.
I do think Priest is probably going up sooner than later. It's always tempting to say that when these people lose championships. And Tom, you and I we would go broke if we made bets every time we said somebody was going up to the main roster. But it does feel like he's the kind of guy who's going to translate well there and he's going to do well there. And I know I've said this before, but Damian Priest, main roster introduction, Royal Rumble Diesel push. I think it makes sense for him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm definitely down with that you should push that guy in the main event, and he can afford to fall back down the card on the strength of his character when that inevitably happens.
Yep. Darrell, what else do you have for us?
I hope y'all wasn't ever going to say that about anybody else going back, going up. Because if that's so, then tonight will be the coolest he will ever look again. Just the interest and everything. That's the last time he'll ever look cool again, because it shows that they don't push people from NXT because they have to reinvent the wheel, and try to find something that he likes that doesn't even fit in 1990. So, man, that's the last cool thing he'll ever do for a long time unless he come back. But
that's a very fatalist.
Don't get seen
a very fatalist way of looking at things. But we've seen enough evidence that it could be a real problem.
I mean, yeah.
Go ahead, Darrell.
Yeah. To go to my next question, and this will be about Pat McAfee and the crew. I like how the guys. I never thought I'd see Arne Lorcan, you know. And I thought I'd never see him in a suit or tux and look at he looked pretty nice in it too. So him and Bert. So hey, I can't hate on that. And I like how they was trying to get Pat McAfee, because the strong part when he did come in was his promos and trying to get him to explain the Rich Holland thing. And I like that they didn't forget that Rich Holland did what he did and all of that. And I like that they making him into, I'm a step ahead of you guys, because I was wondering, I was like, are they finna have Kyle O'Reilly come out here in the ring and act like he finna attack them? Then he joined Pat because he been bought off too. But I guess we all see that even months ago we were thinking that, are they finna split them up or turn the whole Undisputed Era face? Looks like they all face, and I think this was the good person to jump on to get heat on, since everybody liked Kyle O'Reilly. So that was perfect, and I'm happy that Pete Dunne came back and you guys get to experience the new body of Pete Dunne and everything like that. And I like that they're taking them back to those heel ways. And I know people might think, well, he could be cheered with Pat, but with Pat and his snarkish and heelish ways, that probably prevent him from being cheered and stuff like that. And it puts him in a prominent position coming back and not being on that TV for a long time. I like everything about that. What do you guys think about this? And where do you see this new group heading? Because with nobody knowing what's happened to Finn, somebody in this group can win the title and have an Undisputed Era feud for their tag team titles and the NXT title for a little while, can add a little bit more to the tag team title and take the little funk off the main title that everybody keeps getting hurt trying to win.
I thought this was a very effective segment. Pat is so good on the mic as a heel. My wife was watching with me again, and she watches a decent amount and these days anyway. And she did remark, she was like, this guy is so far ahead of most of them on the mic. And I said, yeah. And she asked if he could wrestle. And I said, well, we've only got one match in the can, but it was good. But they could have laid that out, and it'll be real interesting to see if he has a career in him and not just a match. This was a good start for them, and we don't have a name for him. I don't know when we'll get one, but for now, it works that McAfee has just usurped the term that's undisputed. This was a real gut punch for what Pete Dunne did. By the way, Darrell, I did watch. Finally, today was the day I watched 3 of the 6 NXT UKs that have gone up since it returned. I fit those in between my first podcast and this show. So I saw 3 of them. I did see Dunn on the 3rd one, and oh boy, was he looking jacked. So that was interesting. But I thought that it was just perfect that they brought him in for this moment where that is so, and of course he's going to turn. But you didn't have time to think about that because it all happened so quick and you were just so excited to see Dunn again that you didn't run the numbers in your head, or at least I didn't. And I always run the numbers in my head. I'm overthinking everything. And I wasn't even thinking of the fact, well, it's got to be 4-4 because War Games is next. So, yes, War Games, we're headed towards that. Undisputed Era will still never have missed a War Games match. And it does seem they're staying together and they're just all going to the babyface side of the aisle. I had recently said that I was tired of Undisputed Era tag team championship matches and that they needed some time away from that. But I dare say now we have a reason to actually get behind them in an NXT tag team title chase. So lots of things and lots of mini feuds that could come out of this, Tom.
That's all very true. Was there a War Games promo tonight that I missed?
No, I'm okay. Just assuming.
I'm very doubtful that we're going to get one this year, but just to say that, obviously this feels like a setup for it, especially with the addition of Dunn, because all that we had to wonder was who's McAfee's 4th guy. I agree with everything else you said, though. And with as quickly as it happened, not only did we not have time to think about the fact that Dunn could turn heel in this very segment, let alone this angle, but I'm still in the process of figuring out what we saw and what it could lead to, because it seemed like, I don't know, it's hard to read these tea leaves with all the different variables that have been thrown at the Undisputed Era angle, and the fact that they could keep Kyle off TV for a while and say that they took him out and now McAfee's gang is running roughshod, or they just all come back next week and the whole Undisputed Era is fine. It's just, you know, who knows? But, you know, I'm relatively intrigued at this point, and I'll at least look forward to the segments, because indeed McAfee is just so good. And yet again, he was so pitch perfect here. You know, just dogging on the fans and what was the other thing he did that I liked, whatever it was. You know, he particularly ragging on the fans. I just thought he's so good and such a natural at it. I will say that I think Oney Lorcan and Martin Stone hamming it up as heels is just a real hard U-turn for them. I think that it would be just as effective if they basically played their same characters, except maybe didn't throw up the 1-2 anymore. So them standing up there and you know, just laughing with McAfee and acting all smarmy is a bit, it's a bit much. The other thing I was going to say about McAfee, I remember it's, he saved the Ridge Holland thing too, by saying like, yeah, well, I had my guy and then these guys took out my guy, so I got them. And I just, the way he wove that together, I thought worked very nicely. And another thing that I wanted to bring myself to bemoan, and then I couldn't really, was that I almost feel like Pete Dunne should be a bigger deal than playing second to Pat McAfee. But for the reasons that you and Darrell stated, I think it's a good position. And realistically, in 2020, with the ways that WWE's various rosters work and the way that they're all aligned right now, I think this is probably one of the most prominent positions that we could even hope to see him in. So I'll give them this one as well.
As always, Tom, my favorite takeaway is that you still have not been able to give up saying Martin Stone. Danny Burch, who to this day still has other wrestling engagements as Martin Stone. I wonder how he gets into character. If it's a big preparation back. All right. Now tonight I'm Martin Stone. Nate, on this one.
So, I mean, obviously I'm excited to see Lorcan and Burch as NXT champs, cause like they're my guys. So, you know, I'm happy for that. I do agree with Tom though. It's a very stark contrast for them going from, you know, the faces that they were to, you know, these kind of swarmy heels, whatever. But, I'm going to go with it for the time being because I like the fact that they're getting the spotlight. They've got the, you know, they've got the belts around their waist. You know, in yes, the title switch was kind of, you know, it was more about Pat McAfee than Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. But at the same time, you know, and I think Tom might have even said this too, but at the same time, even the NXT tag champs, the tag titles, they haven't really been, you know, they haven't really meant a whole heck of a lot anyway for quite some time. So it's in a way, I guess, okay to kind of use it as a prop in a way. And not, I guess it's a prop anyway, but you know what I mean? You know, kind of use it to use it on them to kind of give a little more credibility to Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch with this turn and kind of going up against Undisputed Era, because I mean, for how long now have we seen Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan get beat by everybody? So if you're going to actually have them, you know, be some sort of a credible threat to Undisputed Era, I guess throw the title around them. It sort of worked for Jinder Mahal, I guess. So, you know, whatever. But Pat McAfee, wow. I every time he gets into a wrestling role like this, I feel like he was born to do it. You know, on the mic, he's phenomenal. You know, obviously what we saw out of him with Adam Cole back a few months ago at TakeOver was fantastic. I'd like to see if he does have it in him again. I'm sure he does. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's going to turn into a career or if it's going to be kind of a one-off special appearance thing. I kind of have a feeling that might be more what it is, but I don't know. It almost feels like it was a one-time thing, and Pat McAfee was like, that was fun. Let's do it again. And it may end up turning into something like that. Who knows? But I'm on board with it. I'm totally fine with it. And I do like the fact that he has this stable behind him now. You've got, you know, he's got the tag champs and Pete Dunne, you know, who we saw return tonight. I'm a huge fan of Pete Dunne's. Glad to see him finally back. You know, we've wondered when he was going to be able to come back for quite some time, you know, with travel restrictions over the past, I don't know what, I think it's like over the past month, 2 months, whatever, being kind of lifted and, you know, things like that. You know, we knew he was going to be coming back sooner rather than later. I like this role for him. You know, in a way, I do agree that, you know, he's a bigger name than, you know, to play kind of a, you know, second fiddle to McAfee, but at the same time, I think this is a cool role for him. You know, it's a prominent spot, Undisputed Era. They might not have the, you know, any gold around their waist right now, but I mean, they're you know, no pun intended, undisputedly at the top of the card. So, actually totally pun intended. They're at the top of the card. It doesn't matter if they have titles or not. They're, you know, the stars, you know, and I'll talk about it when we get there, but Tommaso Ciampa feels like he's the same way. He's hit that like that S tier. He's gone above the A tier. He's hit that S tier of superstar. You know, it doesn't matter what he does, whatever he does is important. So, I feel like it's the same way about Undisputed Era. So having done Lorcan, Birch, all kind of playing, you know, in a high profile spot with Undisputed Era and Pat McAfee, who also has, you know, outside, you know, influence and things like that outside of, you know, the wrestling business, it puts a good spotlight on those three guys who, you know, comparatively haven't had that big of a spotlight on them. Pete Dunne more so than the other two, but I think this is a great spot. I'm looking forward to it. I'm intrigued by it. I think this is probably one of the best storylines going right now, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think, you know, the Garganos, the Cruiserweights, you know, are right up there as well. I don't know if I could pick which one is better, but I think this is right up there. I'm personally really on board with this and looking forward to see where it goes.
Yeah, and I also think that having Dunne as the flank for McAfee keeps him – you know, you run the risk of Dunne being cheered. And they knew he'd be cheered the first time he showed up back in Florida anyway. So,
right.
So this was the way you got to do it. You have to introduce him, and then you can't have it happen backstage and then have him come out and just hope that people don't cheer him. I think he had to do something like this, a true gut punch, and have him be the flank man for McAfee. And now we all look forward to the time when Dunne snaps and says, you know what, I can't do this, and he goes after McAfee. So anyway, yeah, Darrell, what do you have for us next?
Okay, now we go into the thrills of the show, I would say. I love Cameron Grimes. I know some people get tired of the cinematic matches, but he sold me into this because the way that he sold that he was all the way into it and he threw himself all the way into this to make it into something. And I appreciate him doing that because it made me appreciate this. It's last week, to me, that was everything that he did was nice and probably the best of his character so far. And the way that he put himself into it today just made me just love it. I loved it all the way from the Bad Street USA hopping out and that song playing and how he was doing with the how he was talking to Regal, how he was running down the street and everything, and how he started hitting his finish on the zombies to get him up off him. I just enjoyed it. I know it can seem cheap or whatever or low budget, but hey, it's one of those good low budget, and like I said, the way that he got into involved into it, it just it sold it for me. So, big ups to Cameron Grimes. I love him even more. I still think that he can be somebody once you finally put a title on him and you let him get one of those long runs that and that'll add more to his character where he can even more build on to it, probably as a babyface. But tonight, I really love what he did. What do you guys think about this cinematic match?
Oh, God, do I love Cameron Grimes. He's my favorite male performer on this show, with the only possible exception of Kushida, who I've got many years of history watching. So, Grimes, following Grimes for the entirety of this was the way to go. This was horror movie 101. You have to follow the character that's being stalked. And even though the one being stalked is the heel, I think they still had that work. I found out tonight that what I want to see is Cameron Grimes get killed in every horror movie. If he was in every horror movie, I would watch every single one of them just to watch his death scene and him jawing to the very end, trying to convince himself he wasn't scared of the goings on. The only thing I have to say about that I didn't love was that the Bad Street USA music was so loud that it drowned out, for me at least. I couldn't make out what Michael P.S. Hayes was actually saying to Grimes. I didn't really catch any of it. I assume it was about get into this car with the weird zombie guy into this white van and go to the Haunted House of Horrors. Then they go to the Haunted House of Horrors, which I don't know if it was the movie lover in me or what, but there were a lot of Halloween movie references here, some of which I almost certainly didn't catch. I think The Conjuring might have been in there, but I have not seen The Conjuring, so I can't be sure. But we got Psycho and The Ring as a 1-2 punch in the shower room. We got The Shining with the door being busted down by Loomis. And we got I know there's at least one more, but I'd have to look through my notes to be sure. But we got several references. He runs away back to the CWC, and then we got the line from Beth. She goes, "You guys need to watch out. Zombies need brains to live. So Grimes is probably okay, but you two should really get out of there." And Vic giggled throughout his next two lines because he just wasn't expecting that line out of Beth. And I thought that was a nice touch, too. Cinematic matches aren't for everyone, but I think you really get away with it in Halloween Havoc, a chronology that did spawn the Abdullah the Butcher getting electrocuted in the electric chair at the end of a match, to end a match, actually. So, very interested to hear what y'all think, Nate.
So, okay, I'm so very torn on this, and I'll explain why. I do not like horror flicks. I'll watch them occasionally with my wife, and sometimes I'll get into them and whatever, but for the most part, like, I don't know, there's something about the campiness of them, I don't buy into, you know, ghosts and ghouls and things, so they don't scare me. They don't really do it for me. Halloween, where I like Halloween, getting dressed up and, you know, parties when there's not a pandemic and things like that. It's not like my favorite holiday, which is crazy because I live so close to Salem, Massachusetts, which going there on Halloween is, oh my God, it's insane. There's so many people you can't even move. But anyway, it wouldn't be like that this year, but I digress. So because of that, like, I don't want to say I couldn't get into it because, like, The Shining, although I don't like horror flicks, The Shining's, like, one of my favorite movies. That's kind of, like, one of the exceptions that makes the rule. But if it's just not – it's not really one of my favorite genres. So getting into this was a little tough for me. However, I respect it. And, you know, I thought it was done really well. I thought that, you know, Cameron Grimes played his part extremely well. Same with Loomis for that matter, just that, you know, crazy brooding kind of character in the background lurking and things like that. So I think for the general populace that it would be a, you know, it would be a major success. For me personally, because horror is just really not my thing, I enjoyed it, but I don't think I enjoyed it as much as probably you guys did, knowing how much you guys are film buffs, or, you know, some other people probably did that like the horror genre a bit more. And then on top of that as well, I like hokiness and weirdness in my wrestling. There's a place for it. Absolutely, there's a place for it. But one of the things that I've always liked about NXT is they keep that to a minimum. Yeah, this is Halloween. I get it. But they keep that stuff to a minimum typically. So even on a Halloween-themed episode like this, it's like, are we supposed to believe that, like, zombies are canon now? Unless you're The Undertaker, but whatever. In a way, I kind of explained all this over-the-top zombie stuff away, not just because it's Halloween, but because every Halloween, WWE gets into all these, like, these toys, like, they get into zombie-branded toys, they do zombie-branded, like, mobile games, and they've got, you know, different zombie-branded things that they do, throughout their marketing. So it's like, in a way, I could see them, you know, doing something like this so they could then market those zombie NXT things or something like that. Who knows? That'd be cool. That was one of the things that was going through my head, at least kind of to help ground me a little bit, throughout kind of a lot of these hocus pocus weird stuff, that I'm not necessarily a huge fan of. But like I said, overall, I respect the match. I thought it was entertaining. I don't want to see all that hokey stuff sneak into NXT. We've talked a little bit about it with like Escobar and him maybe like being able to channel some of like the Aztec god powers or something like that. And I talked about it. It was the week Kelly wasn't here. I remember talking about it, and I could be on board with it if they did it just a little bit. Maybe they insinuated it, but not necessarily go full bore with it. I want them to keep that away from NXT. NXT's changed so much from the show that it was a year ago in terms of just, you know, pacing and layout and everything, not just because of COVID, but a lot of it because of COVID. I'm a creature of habit. Leave my stuff alone. But that's just me. Yeah, that's what I thought. How about you, Tom?
Where to start? I guess I'll just pick up on some little things. Speaking of funny things from commentary, I did enjoy Barrett saying zombies are legal in this match. And I was thinking that with Regal at the beginning, sort of coolly, calmly encouraging, he's fully in control of the situation with Grimes freaking out and not wanting to do the match. And he's just saying, no, you gotta go do it. I was just thinking, okay, if Shotzi is NXT's Sven Gulli, then William Regal is NXT's Vincent Price, just in this context. And if any VIP listeners are keeping up with 8 years back, and I hope you are, Michael Hayes coming out of that van and the dry ice that was billowing out from behind him in his flashy outfit, it reminded me so much of when George Clinton stepped out of that van to sit in on my lighting class when I was a Full Sail student. If you heard that story, it vividly sent me back to that, just minus the tiny little blonde women on George Clinton's arms. So the last cinematic match we got from WWE was Sheamus versus Jeff Hardy, which I was actually extremely high on. I thought they did a fantastic job with it. And around that time, I was still keeping track of what my favorite pandemic era cinematic matches were. I would have to go back into that list, but I can confidently say that this one falls about halfway down. We've had some excellent ones. We've had some atrocious ones. And this one, you could tell what it was going for, and I think it did a fine job. Indeed, as expected, we were relying on Cameron Grimes to keep the energy up, because despite the production value that they're putting into this, Dexter Lumis is less expressive than a Michael Myers mask. He just stands there, and that's all he does. He is so dreadfully boring. I can't imagine putting all this effort into putting him over. But here we are, and Cameron Grimes did a fine job of carrying it. And the filmmaking aspects of it, Kelly pointed out a lot of it. But, yeah, I felt like this was very, very not just slasher-inspired, but distinctly like, okay, we're going to do this from this John Carpenter movie, and we're going to do this from this Tom Savini special effect. And it was very much from that school of filmmaking. So there was some inspiration here, and I think they had fun with it and did an okay job. And I thought it was surprising, even though I expected it to be cinematic, I thought it was surprising that with 100 people back at the Performance Center, even if they're not paying fans, that they did so much of it as a cinematic thing. But that's why it just made all that much more sense when they gold dust and pipered their way back to the COVID Wrestling Center. So I think that covers it. Yeah, it's just like, it's such a weird thumbs up because I thought they did a fine job, but it's all to put over Dexter Loomis, who is completely unworth putting over in any way.
I came away with much of that same feeling and just like kind of stunned that that it's still happening. And I just felt like all I could write on my recap was, I guess this really did spice up Loomis, whose act feels like it's played out at this point. I just don't know where you go with him. You can't do zombie matches with him every week. If you could, then maybe you'd have something, but you can't do that. You can't do that, NXT. You can't. So, I don't know. Darrell, do you have one more?
Yes, the last one. Real Ripley. I'm thinking they're doing her back right again. This match that she had today was, I like a big house fight, a big woman house fight, and hard hitting, as you expected. And I'm curious, where do they go with her now since she finally got that pin? Where do you guys see that they're going with Real Ripley, and how did you guys like?
Thanks as always, Darrell. Rhea and Raquel. So this went 12:49. It had the feel early on of a match that would go about 5 to 7 minutes shorter than that, just because a lot of these matches that feel like fights, they keep brief, even if they're in the main event of main roster pay-per-views. But that's not what they did. It was very interesting to see Rhea fight from underneath, not an unpleasant thing. I thought that was kind of fun. This felt like the monsters you had to throw at Hogan every year or two to actually make him look somewhat human, that he could be defeated. So it meant all that much more when he overcame. And I mean, Raquel Gonzalez is not Andre the Giant, but I thought she did pretty well here, and I thought she's progressed pretty well, that she's hanging with the big dogs, and Rhea is definitely the big dog as far as they're concerned. So Rhea goes over Raquel in 12:49 with Riptide. I wouldn't say out of nowhere. They got to it in a relatively realistic place, although she really had to pick her spot because Raquel did dominate and was established as the stronger of the two throughout the match, with which Rhea continued to sell with surprise as if her whole life she has not had to be not as strong as someone. So I like the story told, but I'm real interested to see where you guys think it's headed, because a lot of the women seem to be figured into storylines already, and Rhea doesn't necessarily have a ready-made story unless Robert Stone is about to find another person to throw at her, Tom.
Just pointing out that on the same show, on the same night where we got a Yeti reference, you said the words Giant and Gonzalez in the same sentence.
Oh, my.
Just going to point that out. If I isolated this from the rest of the show, I really liked it, and it's what it needed to be. It's what I hoped to see from a match out of these two women. No one knows Rhea like Raquel. No one knows Raquel like Rhea. I'm not even disappointed that they didn't like add Freddie and Jason stuff to their gear, because that was one of the several nicknames that they went by. I've mentioned that a number of times. It goes back to, I mean, that's the reason why Rhea is still called the Nightmare, because on the Coconut Loop, she and Raquel would tag together as the Nightmare, like Nightmare on Elm Street. And then Raquel, I'm not sure, I don't even remember what she called herself, but she was the Jason Voorhees. And when they finally have their big singles match on Halloween, they don't add any accoutrement to their entrances or anything. But I wasn't even disappointed by that. What disappointed me was that, again, I apologize in advance, because it's when NXT gives you the exact same match constantly, the exact same pace constantly, there's not much variance in the analysis. Because the rest of the show matched this pace, this didn't stand out, and it should have. So even though I ended up feeling like Candace and EO suffered most from that issue, this also suffered from that. And I almost want to go back and just watch it by itself. Because I think it would come off better. And I think I was surprised. I didn't really put too much thought into it, but I think I was surprised that Raquel did not go over, because yeah, it just doesn't feel like, with Ember and Tony coming back, it doesn't feel like Ripley is, even though she is the Hogan, she is the most focal star of the division next to EO, it doesn't feel like she's on track to win the belt again. And you know, 2 weeks from now, maybe I'll be saying like, oh my gosh, they did another title flip and Rhea's the champion again, at the rate that we're going. But it feels like there are other people who are next up. And this win confuses that a bit, because it seems like she's now in that conversation again, because this was like this felt like a de facto number one contenders match. So there are some pieces to fit into place, and I hope that they've thought about that ahead of time rather than just feeling they wanted to give the baby face a win.
Yeah, I thought that this was a precarious booking situation for the two, because it would make sense for Raquel to go over for a few pro wrestling reasons, but also was dangerous for Rhea, because she's taken more losses than she has wins lately, or at least it seems that way, in comparison to the unstoppable Rhea of a year ago at this time. So
that's fair. I look at that she comes off like such a star, and that's never stopped, but there does seem to be a narrative surrounding her that she has not recovered from losing to Charlotte. So that's fair.
Yeah. So, it seems like NXT is still pretty good at big picture thinking. So, so let's hope that, that next piece is in place. We do have a call from our 240 caller, or a question from our 240 caller. We will go to that right after I throw to Nate about, Rhea and Raquel.
Cool. So I'll be kind of brief then. I've been waiting to see this match for, God, I'd say probably close to a year at this point. It was even before she was Raquel Gonzalez and she was still Reyna. I remember thinking to myself, okay, and I think I even talked about this on the show. I want to see these two clash. They're so similar that I wanted, you know, their styles are similar, similar builds. I want to see what happens when, you know, the immovable force hit, you know, hits the or unstop. Yeah, I don't know. I screwed that up, but you know what I meant. As I always do. But I wanted to see what was going to happen, and I thought they delivered tonight. I thought they delivered in a pretty big way. I really enjoyed the match. Yes, I agree that it was definitely fell victim to the pacing issue that we've been talking about for a while. But that said, I liked it. I think this was probably my second favorite match of the night, first being EO and Candace. I was looking at this as a Rhea win from the start. I thought it would make sense, you know, for Raquel to win, especially they've been kind of pushing her a bit, especially too, where it looked like they started to push Xia Li a little bit. And then, you know, Raquel comes in and takes all the steam out of Xia Li's, all the wind out of her sails. So, you know, it would have made sense there, but I felt like this was going to be more of a Rhea win simply because of what you were talking about a minute ago, where she really just hasn't seemed like the same performer since her WrestleMania loss. She still seems like a star, sure, but the shine is kind of gone, or at least it's not as bright as it used to be. And I think that's kind of by design. I think they're cooling her down so they can bring her, you know, push her back up, especially probably before her inevitable main roster run. But that's kind of the pattern that I feel like she's been in for, you know, really since she returned, after her hiatus from WrestleMania. She's kind of just been in that pattern. She hasn't really done anything major of note. She hasn't, you know, had any major wins that I can. That's the thing. She might have. I don't remember. But that's a problem, because you should be. I should be able to remember things like that if you're wanting to build one of your stars up. That's kind of what I got to say there. Although, like I said, overall, I think the match was great. Reyna, or Raquel, I'm not really sure where she's necessarily going to go from here. I want to see her kind of get back with Dakota Kai. Not that they've ever really broken up, but I want to see her kind of get back with Kai and them, the two of them kind of get up to some hijinks or whatever. Whether it be in Kai's, run for the title or what. I also don't really know where they're going to go with Ripley right now, or where she's going to slot in. We've talked about her. We talked about her earlier on the show. We talked about her last few weeks. The women's roster stacked. So, and everywhere you look on that roster, you could potentially have a main event player. So it's tough. I'm not really sure where they're going to go with her right now. But I feel like they do have something in mind. I feel like they got a plan for her. Hopefully that plan is able to come to fruition, because a lot of things have changed due to the whole COVID thing, but we'll see what happens. I think, you look at the whole Undisputed Era, Pat McAfee story, and we know for a fact that's changed 1,000 times due to injuries and COVID and this, that, the other thing. And I think they did a really good job kind of bringing that all back around and making it seem like that might have been where they were going in the first place. Maybe they'll do it again, but we'll see what happens. So let's go to our other caller.
All right, 240, I am going to unmute you here. And what did you have for tonight's show?
Hey, gentlemen, good evening. How are you? This is Steve from Maryland.
Hello, Steve from Maryland. Doing all right tonight. What'd you think of Halloween Havoc?
Okay, well, I thought the most of the in-ring action was good, and I agree with the pacing concerns. Within once the bell rang, everything was very, very high speed. But there were parts of it. I think they tried to break it up and not make the show seem so high paced with all of these video inserts that they had, and I'm not sure, some of those set up matches for next week, but the one that concerns me was, why do that profile on Finn Balor and then not follow it up with any sort of update on his condition or the status of the title or anything like that, because it's still a big question mark.
Yeah, Steve, I'll tell you what, that's exactly the feeling that I had. I wrote that in my recap. I did the superstar profile, and I just waited it out, because these superstar profiles, they're a whole lot of fluff. They're really nothing. And then the one thing I said was, gosh, I really thought this was going to lead into a health update, but no such luck. If I had to guess, I would say they're probably still in a wait and see approach. I think if they knew that he couldn't carry the title, they'd maybe tell us now, unless they already know that he can't and they don't want to sour the Halloween Havoc show, and they're maybe saving that for next week. Tom, any thoughts on that?
That was exactly my thought, that if they know anything, which they probably don't at this point. I say they probably don't. I don't know why I think that. I figure that they're probably just allowing themselves to figure things out now that they're week to week again, rather than doing bi-weekly tapings. But I just feel like they didn't want to put that on this show. So that is my thought. Although I will also say, Steve, it is great to hear from you. I finally changed my Twitter bio, because after not being able to perform on the spot last time, I tested myself a couple times, and man, once it gets to those last few verses, I just can't. do it anymore. I'm not up to snuff anymore in my old age, so I had to go and suck it up and change the bio.
Knows oh, okay. some of the lyrics to Rapper's Delight. which I guess is true of almost everyone. you just know more.
And then just a bunch of scat.
Right.
That's about what I know.
but one thing I want to also bring.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh.
Yep.
Going back to Sunday, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, for those of us who are NXT long-termers and have always been talking about how great the Bayley and Sasha matches were at their takeovers, the one in Brooklyn and then the Iron Woman match, we kept saying, we know they can be really, really great, but Sunday night, I think, was the first time they really showed and gave us a match that equaled those their NXT classics.
I would agree with that.
So would I.
And I haven't seen it. I am behind. The only part of the main roster I watch is the pay-per-views, although it's been very tempting to watch SmackDown of late because of the stories they're telling with Roman that sound like they're pretty gripping. But I didn't. But you guys, pretty good match, Tom?
Yeah, the whole evening was overshadowed by just how excellent Roman versus Jay was, and you've heard that from me on 8 years back. I agree with Steve's sentiment that even if this wasn't quite Brooklyn, it is the most that they have been able to show that we've been waiting to see from them since the NXT days. And I know everybody's crazy about Sasha, and that's great, but particularly Bayley for me is just mwah. She is perfect. I really, really have been so impressed with her in this heel run.
Yeah, I've liked it too. And she's somebody that we thought, why would you abandon what you had? And we didn't know that this was in Bayley. And in watching the main roster pay-per-views, even the pay-per-views at times are just like this drags. I always look forward to her stick. My brother loves wrestling, but still is fairly markish. And he just hates her. And he hates her for all the reasons that a casual wrestling fan is supposed to hate her. I love that it still works on him.
Even though it's a different situation with my 10-year-old daughter, it's the same thing with her. She is so invested in hating Bayley. She just, no matter what Bayley does, she wants to be on the opposite side of it.
Nate, any other thoughts on that?
I agree with you guys 100%. Their Hell in a Cell match was great. I think it was right up there with Brooklyn. So I'm right on board with that. Don't really have much more to add.
I can dig it. Steve, if there's one more thought, go ahead. Otherwise,
all right.
One
last thing. Going back to whether or not there's going to be a War Games match, my concern is whether or not they have access to a venue big enough to hold a double ring and a big cage like that, because from what I can see, I don't know if the converted performance center is that big, and they lose their,
I was saying that's what I was thinking is I don't think the CWC is big enough to hold two rings, at least the way that it's currently set up. They might be able to move it around, but, I don't know. I don't know if they could hold two rings, the cage and everything else in there.
And also I heard that they might be looking for a new home for the Thunderdome because the NBA is talking about starting up in December, which means they can't use the Orlando or the Amway Center because the Magic and I think there's also a minor league hockey team that needs to get back in there.
Okay. Well, Steve, I thank you for that. That is interesting. I hadn't really thought about it. I'm not really a logistics guy. I'm a, hey, this can happen because I want it to kind of guy. Very impulsive. I didn't think about the fact that it couldn't happen for that reason. I just was anticipating it. And because it seems like they're really working toward a very clear 4-on-4 and building to it better than they have for any of the War Games matches in the past, with the very significant exception of the women's match last year. I just thought that that's where they were headed. Now, I guess they could just have a Survivor Series match.
I just thought of something that they could do. I don't know if they would do it, but they could do it. Is they could potentially convert the Thunderdome for War Games.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess they could.
You know,
Tom, was there any reason specifically that you thought that maybe they were not going to do War Games this year?
Steve pointed out the main reasons why I'm thinking it, and I think that the four-on-four feud right now is probably wishful thinking in case they're able to get creative with it, whether it be in a different arena, whether it be figuring out something with the Amway Center and being able to convert something on a one-night basis, whether it be, I mean, they're not going to want to do that with the way they've set up the COVID Wrestling Center. It's they could fit two rings in there. I mean, this is the performance center where they have like seven rings set up normally. So they can fit it in there. They're just going to have to move a heck of a lot of other stuff and get creative with the cage. Not invite fans back. So, not invite fans back. Okay. They have to do War Games. I'm on board. Steve mentioned the main points. Absolutely anything can happen. It just seems like, yes, indeed, for the date that they normally do it, the logistics are against it.
Okay, so JB emails us, what do you guys make of NXT not being included in the draft or Survivor Series? Number one, is this Vince losing faith and or interest in NXT? No, I don't think so. Number two, how do you think Triple H feels about this? In talking to Triple H on a semi-monthly basis during the media calls, Triple H seems like the kind of guy who waits to find out. He often doesn't get word on how things are going to happen until late because that comes from up on high. And when they get that, they kind of have plans in place for both inevitabilities. So I don't think he thinks about it other than, okay, we have a plan for this and we have a plan. If it doesn't happen, let's adapt to whatever it happens. Number three, is this a net positive or a net negative for NXT as a whole? Number four, does this not bode well for the future of NXT as a true third brand that participated at big events like Survivor Series, the Rumble, or Mania? As always, love the show. Also read a report that there's been another COVID outbreak within NXT. Is this the third or fourth time? When is leadership going to start holding some of these pandemic deniers and jerks responsible? That is a question we asked Triple H on the last call, and it seemed like there was some frustration there, and it seems like there's some folks who don't care. I don't think this does not bode well. Probably a better way to say that, but I don't think this is a big thing for NXT as a third brand. I think that it made sense in building their brand to do that, but I also think it makes sense for NXT to live in a separate universe. I think as a true third brand, it can be problematic and a little bloated. I actually prefer them to live kind of in their own bubble and to not have their storytelling hamstrung by the fact that they suddenly for 3 weeks have to work Survivor Series stories into what they're already doing with War Games or whatever's going to happen in November, Tom.
No, I'm so tempted to try to do a Triple H impersonation of what his answer to that was, just basically saying, well, in the end, there's only so much you can do because these people are just living their personal lives. Okay, I guess that's how the NBA and the NHL were able to have successful seasons. Okay, cool. I think it was the NBA. I don't know. I haven't kept track, but I know
the NBA had zero positive tests for the season. They bubbled and it worked.
Yep. Okay. I'm telling myself that I'm going to get off the subject because I've made it known. They're not. Yeah, okay. I'm going to get off the subject. I'm wishy-washy on the Survivor Series thing because obviously every year with the recent Survivor Series format for the past handful of years, the build to it is you can set your watch by the fact that it's like the worst creative all year for the weekly TV. But then the pay-per-view is almost always kick-ass. And last year's pay-per-view, it raised the profile for some NXT people, like Rhea Ripley and like Keith Lee. So it's hard to argue too much with that, but I feel like for being objective, answering objectively here, I think it's a net positive for NXT this year to not be involved, and I'm not factoring the virus into that with crossing over the rosters or whatever. There's enough, you know, personnel crossover anyway and mingling in the meantime. I think it's objectively a net positive because they are so much more blatantly, instead of doing what they said they were going to do and run the marathon and focus on themselves, they are so much more blatantly trying to compete with the other program on TV on Wednesday nights. And part of the way that you do that is by holding on to your wrestlers and building them up continually rather than always sending them off. And that is extremely different from the NXT that we all fell in love with. But I think that that is a lot of the reason for why we're seeing less, like, they're not involved in the draft, not involved in Survivor Series, because they are trying to have their own identity. Although theoretically, going back to Jack's email from before, theoretically, if they were involved in Survivor Series this year, I agree that Damian Priest and Io Shirai are the ones who potentially could benefit the most, who were not quite as factored in last year. I think they could be like the Keith Lee and Rhea Ripley of 2020 if that were to happen.
Yeah, Io did okay. She survived the Survivor Series match, I think, along with Rhea, right?
I that sounds right. And there was weird thing about, like, she was feuding with Candice and the two of them sort of got along for the match or something along those lines. Yeah. It's not like she was forgotten. And was Priest in the men's match? I want to say he was.
I think he was, and he exited first. He got his work in, but yes, Walter took him out. Yeah, I think that's right. That, I think, is right. That was Walter who went out first.
Right, that's, yeah.
Yeah, he got
Walter,
his...
Walter, like, come in, I'm the big badass who nobody sees, and, oh, I'm just going to lay down.
Yeah, that was no good. I do think Priest was in it, though. The mind, it does go. What are you going to do? Nate, anything on that?
Honestly, not really.
Okay, cool. Email from David Podnar. This may just be the after show glow, but I love the show. Great opening match. I loved Cameron Grimes and his reactions, even the creepy shower scene. He was trying to hit on someone in the middle of a match. Never thought I would hear the phrase "zombies are legal" during a match. The Shockmaster. Also, thoughts for Candace's hip with that drop into a ladder. It was as violent as I thought it would be from these two. Shout out to Shotzi for being over the top and with the great costumes and all the changes. Have a safe Halloween, everyone. Dave Podnar from Pittsburgh. Well, he mentioned the Shockmaster. Drake and Dane in the back did their did some goofy stuff. Drake was dressed as Hollywood Hogan, and he got in a couple of decent lines here. He called Mackenzie Mean Gene twice. And he also referred to his 2.4-inch pythons, which was pretty fun. Then he was flanked by the Yeti on one side, and the other one was made to look – I don't know if he was supposed to be Oz.
It was supposed to be the Giant. It was the Giant and the Yeti in that segment.
Okay.
Played by it's Zechariah something. I always forget this guy's name. I wrote it down. Zechariah – Smith.
I'll let you find
I forgot the
Smith.
Last name.
Okay.
I think he's a former basketball guy, I think, but he's been a performance center trainee for a while.
And Killian Dane comes in as the Shockmaster and runs off those guys, and Drake is all disappointed that he didn't trip because that's the Shockmaster's deal, and he goes, oh, yeah, I threw that thing away, and then he gives he gives Drake the mask, and Drake promptly trips or is pushed or whatever, and Dane laughs. I continue to enjoy what they're doing with these two, and it's not over for me yet. I like the odd couple thing, and there hasn't been enough of it in wrestling. So on that, and then as part of the Halloween episode, we also got the fact that Vic was dressed up as Waldo of Where's Waldo fame. And I love, just as funny to me is the fact that Wade Barrett did Halloween as Bad News Barrett, complete with gavel. So, anything on those two bits, Nate?
So the Bad News Barrett thing, when he said that he's he went as Bad News Barrett, his favorite wrestler. All I could think of was all of the Halloween episodes of The Office where Jim would, he was three hole punch Jim or, oh God, I forget, but every Halloween he would come up with like the lamest costume and it was at the same time, like spectacular. So, I thought it was great. Vic as Waldo, I thought fit, the round glasses, I think is a good look. Keep it up. Hey, what the hell was the other segment? I was too hung up on Bad News Barrett.
It was, and I just got hung up on it because I was just thinking of Vic as Waldo.
Oh, Dane and Drake.
Yeah, and I was thinking, Vic, if you want to go full Waldo, get lost. but yes, Drake
and Dane.
Maverick and Dane.
That was good. That was good. No, so I completely agree with you. I'm still very high on Dane and Drake. As I've said a thousand times, I love a comedic duo. The Broserweights were great. There was even before that, there was I think it was Keith Lee and Matt Riddle that I was loving as an odd couple pairing. So they were comedic, but an odd couple pairing anyway. So yeah, I'm still on board with this. They're amusing. They're still popping me. The whole segment tonight was, it was fun, but obviously very staged. And everything has been, it came across a little a little too fluffy. But at the same time, I laughed. I liked it. The Shockmaster thing, the Yeti, the infamous hug of doom or whatever the hell they were calling it. It was amusing. It was fun. I think Drake did a good job kind of taking that Hulk Hogan gimmick and making it his own at the same time. So all for it. I still think they should be called the Rockstar Spuds.
Oh, I don't think I heard it when you said that before. And,
I did because it's an homage to Drake Maverick is Rockstar.
No,
Spud.
I got that.
But also Killian Dane is Irish and potatoes.
Right. Oh yes, potatoes. Well done. I guess whatever. It's fun. Rockstar Spud is a pretty fun name. Period. Tom on those segments.
Oh, Ron, that's the same thing you wore to last year's party. Yes, this is my Halloween costume. real quick, Tommaso Ciampa, Damian Priest, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, and Walter was the men's Survivor Series team from NXT last year. The Dane and Maverick thing is probably the dumbest thing that these guys have done yet together, but at the same time, it was harmless. I didn't mind it. I don't feel like it did anything for them, at least for me, but I also don't think it damaged them, so whatever. The worst thing about it is that they really should have been dressed as ponies.
Oh, yeah, we did cover that. And we know that people within NXT listen, so why wouldn't they be? They'll get there. They'll
should
get
have
there.
Been a little they're My saving. Little Pony or something.
That needs to be the hook for a show and not just part of Halloween Havoc.
That is why I second-guessed making the joke, because it's true. This does require long-term character development.
Right. On a show with 53 minutes and 42 seconds of wrestling in and out of the ring, because we had in and out of the ring matches, I did not count the time for Loomis and Grimes, because how would you even time it? But the other four matches came out to 53:42, which is a lot in its own right, even not considering the cinematic match and the fact there were only four matches. The shortest match was Jake Atlas versus Santos Escobar. I missed it, but I don't think this was for the championship. I thought this was going to go a little longer and that Jake Atlas was going to get more than one match out of it, but he lost. I don't know if you want to say definitively, but he did lose in a pretty brief affair when Raul Mendoza put on one of the loaded masks and headbutted him, leaving him open for Escobar's finisher. I don't remember what Escobar's finisher is called because Vic called it Legato, which is not what it's called. So I guess we'll have to figure that out later, Tom.
I'll be completely honest. I thought at the end of Gargano Priest that I came up with a much more salient point than what I actually said when we analyzed that match. But then I drank two glasses of wine and I forgot what it was before I could write it down. So when this match started, I thought, okay, we're going to get another 10-minute work rate match here. Here's my opportunity to rewind back to Gargano Priest and see what I missed and see if I can spark that memory. I failed in sparking that memory, but I only revisited maybe 45 seconds. And then I scanned back to where I needed to be, and the match was already over. So I just thought, you know what? I clearly didn't miss much. I'm just going to rely on Kelly and Nate to carry this one.
That was a long way to say. I got
it,
no
it
thought.
Sure was.
Love it.
But it was a fun way to get there, Nate.
Yeah, right. No, so wow. I haven't slept in so long. What the hell are we talking about now? Oh, Atlas and Escobar. Okay, cool. Yeah, Tom's diatribe threw me off.
I retroactively review the match as perfectly fine. It was all right. I thought Atlas was good.
So I liked the match itself, but I was really surprised how short it was. And considering how Atlas has been kind of booked lately and kind of the push that we were expecting him to get, or at least, you know, we were kind of talking about anyway, I felt like he should at least have gotten a little bit more out of this. At the same time, it still makes Escobar look incredibly strong. So, I mean, maybe that was what they were going for in the long term. But yeah, the really quick defeat for Atlas just really felt deflating. And I kind of just, I wanted to see him. I had a feeling he was going to lose. But then there was also the caveat of it being a non-title match. So there was that in the back of my head, there was like that, you know, small possibility, maybe Atlas going to get an upset win here and, you know, move into a cruiserweight title match. So I don't know. I thought this was a little strange. The booking here was a little strange. I think I'm okay with it because I think I'm more invested in Escobar than I am Atlas right now. So personally, I think I'm okay with it, but at the same time, I'm scratching my head, at least as to right now. We'll see what happens next week or at least the next time we get, Atlas and Escobar on screen together. We'll find out, you know, what happens. But to me anyway, it just felt like Atlas kind of just got the rug pulled out from under him here. I could be wrong, but it did. It just felt kind of deflating.
Okay, the two other segments we haven't covered both have to deal with pushing matches that are promoting matches that are happening next week. We had a small Ember Moon hype segment talking about her opponent next week, Dakota Kai, saying that when she left, Dakota Kai was scared of her own shadow, and now she's one of the best in the world. And then just some basic babyface things. Moving towards a match that Ember will inevitably win as she rises towards the title picture. Ciampa talked. Tommaso Ciampa did a little backstage quiet segment on the culture and attitude changing in NXT. The letters are the same, and there's still a lot of talent, but a lot of folks who think they're entitled to things, and they think they just get in line, and that's how it works. And the money line here for me was, you're hungry, you eat. I'm hungrier, I eat. It was very simple, but I absolutely loved it. And the real money here was talking about Velveteen Dream, and he said, and this is a kid who can't get out of his own way, which is probably the closest they've gotten to actually saying something about his off-screen issues in all the time that this has been going on, Tom.
I liked Ciampa's promo. I still feel like the guy comes off as a babyface, and even though I mean this rather sardonically, when he's saying, man, NXT is just unrecognizable now, I'm like, yep, I agree. You're a babyface because you're saying that. But then the basis for Ciampa versus Dream is so thin that I legitimately forgot that's the feud he was in. I thought this was sort of a reestablishment of whatever Ciampa's mission statement is. I thought that's what this was going to be. So then when he brings up Dream at the end of it, I'm just like, gee, what a waste of a good promo, because it's just building the next week's match. Who cares? And the Ember thing, I didn't really get too much out of it other than just further concern that of what I mentioned last week, that while a lot of people seem to be excited for this to be a program, I feel like they're leading to just a definitive win for Ember and move on. Which, I mean, good for Ember. Fantastic. But it just feels like they could give her that win over somebody that's not as valuable as Dakota Kai, and Dakota Kai seems to have settled into a gatekeeper role.
Yeah, she's very much the odd woman out right now, and that's the whole reason they turned her heel in the first place. Ah, she's awesome! Okay. Nate, anything on those two segments?
So I'll the Ember Moon segment, really not so much. I think Tom pretty much said everything that I wanted to say, really. I didn't have much on it at all. The Ciampa segment, I love the promo. When he does a promo like this, I absolutely love it. Just, you know, looking at the camera, you don't have a backstage interviewer. He's speaking directly to the audience. He's speaking directly to you. That's one thing that they don't do in the WWE environment, period, really, is they never have the talent look at the camera. You know, you're always looking like off the screen or, you know, like off to the side or whatever. But Ciampa, he's looking directly at you. You get that connection, that the eye contact, that means something. And so that first off is a big thumbs up for me. But just how impassioned he got, and just, I mean, everything about his body language and all of that, I really, really dug it. I 100% agree with Tom. It was kind of a waste of a great promo because it is just building up to next week. I too kind of forgot that – I wouldn't say I forgot that he was kind of in a thing with Dream. I still remember the cast from last week. But at the same time, I kind of try to forget about Dream right now because I still really don't want anything to do with him. But, hey, I guess we're stuck with him. Yeah, I don't know. I liked the segment. Trying to take all that, you know, the dark cloud away from Velveteen Dream as a wrestler. If I look at him just as a wrestler, I got to admit, I mean, he's definitely talented. I think as a technical match, it will be a great match. I can't say I'm necessarily looking forward to it. And I hate that because Ciampa's probably, if not my favorite male performer in NXT, like he's right up there at the top. So kind of sucks that he's in a feud right now that like with somebody that I in real life kind of don't care for.
You know, it's funny. I mentioned guys like Grimes and Kushida, but Ciampa really is probably my all-around favorite, but I don't think of him because, as you said, he reached S level. He's beyond where these mere mortals are that I think about all the time. He's such a given that I don't even think to name him as a favorite.
Oh, yeah.
He's just so, so good. And like, I was on the Ciampa train years before just about anyone. So, and I will beat that drum, and I'm very proud of it. What were you going to say?
All I was going to say was I wouldn't be surprised if Ciampa is just an NXT mainstay and he never actually hits the main roster. Like, same thing with Gargano. I mean, they've said that they want to do it. I don't know if, you know, the company would actually let him do it, but those are two guys. And I'll even throw LeRae in there if they want to, you know, the whole, like, the trio or whatever. But I could actually see them spending the rest of their WWE career in NXT and building that brand and being the faces of NXT. And I would be 100% for it. I think they could use that continuity as well because, you know, that roster is constantly changing. It would be nice to have some characters on the show that are consistent for, you know, years. So I'd be pushing for that.
The last email was from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was very entertaining. I thought the set was themed well. Shotzi did great, and the Drake and Killian costumes were fun for us old school fans. As far as matches go, Dexter Lumis is built for cinematic matches, and Cameron played his part well, too. My question is, what does the women's title picture look like now, presuming that
that tonight was the blow off for Candace. Thanks as always, and happy Halloween. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Yeah, I would say that this was the blow off for Candace, probably. You could move her back in if you wanted, but it was definitive, and she took, I mean, she took a visual that made it beating that that made it seem like it was definitive and it was the end. And she's got a new feud built in already, so I would say that's over. For me, the next name is probably Toni Storm. That's where they seemed like they were going to take it. And then the next name that feasibly could really take the championship is probably Ember Moon. Not that it can't be Toni Storm, but it seems like there's more work to be done for Toni Storm to reestablish her than there is for Ember Moon, even though Amber's a bit of a reclamation project too, because of her hard times towards the, her kind of just assimilating and not being anybody really on the main roster, and then a very lengthy injury layoff. That was our last email, so we can get the hell out of here afterwards. But anything here, Nate?
So the only thing that I want to touch on that I don't think I did and I meant to is, so the one thing that I wanted for Halloween Havoc was I wanted a giant freaking pumpkin. I wanted a giant freaking pumpkin, and they gave us a giant freaking pumpkin, and then Gargano slashed it within minutes of the show. He destroyed my pumpkin, and I was pissed at him the rest of the show. I'm surprised I didn't even bring it up until now. Because,
and then Priest made a cover on Gargano on top of the deflated pumpkin, which don't know if that's something they planned or if it's something they saw and they were like, this is something we should do.
I thought it was great that it came full circle. I liked it. That's really all I got to say. I think we touched on everything else pretty well for Kevin's email.
Tom, anything else?
I agree with you. It's Toni in the short term, Ember in the long term, with Rhea as a wild card. At this point, if I'm booking it, I'm putting Io over Rhea with a handshake finish. But yeah, that's the wild card that I can't predict. If Rhea wins it, then I'm not looking at Ember as a winner. But that's trying to soothsay a little bit too much. And I do think that you can, even with Shotzi involved, I think you can loop Candace back in, but that is going to depend on the strength of this Gargano way plan that they seem to have in place, and just how well that ends up panning out, what direction they want to take that. And with that said, I am at Tom Staup on Twitter. I hope you guys are listening to 8 Years Back on VIP on Saturdays.
And this coming Saturday is the one to hear, because it was the first ever match for Roman Reigns on WWE programming. Who did he wrestle? You'll have to listen to it to find out. But it's somebody that you may know and who has been successful in places that are not WWE. But yeah, lots of insight there. Some of Roman's act at the time is Roman's act now, and some of it is definitely not. So interesting stuff there, but a good listen. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Nate, who are you?
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I will now be posting on Thursdays. So I typically would have them up on Fridays. It'll be up on Thursdays now. So look for that. And if you like gaming or need a therapeutic outlet, like RPG gaming, a therapeutic outlet, hit me up on YouTube at DegeTime, DegeTime.
All right. Cheers, everyone, and we will see you in 7.